This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast, into the 9 o'clock hour. Into the 9 o'clock hour we go.
Talk about the elephant in the room.
No.
general nonpartisan election stress. It's you and I were talking during the break of like, okay, I try to create barriers in my life and where I kind of, you know, I make my decisions on how I'm going to vote and everything, but I try to remove it from social media as much as possible.
Yeah.
And yet in this last week, despite all of my muting of anything political at all on my timeline and everything, it creeps in. Right. And I swear this is 100% nonpartisan. It's just a constant deluge of all this stuff that I don't like it. And I feel like cumulatively you and I are a little bit hazy this morning, and it's not because of, I don't think it has anything to, it's not like because of specific results or anything, it's just, it's so much.
Yes.
I've tried to create barriers from my from the rest of my life, from when I make my political decisions, and it just all fell to pot over this last week.
The biggest irony, and then we'll move on to the Texans, is that the feed of which you speak, for me it's on Twitter or X.
Yeah.
And there are two feeds. One is who you're following. The other one is titled For You. I actually spend more time on the For You than I do the following, because I'm always curious what they're going to dish me on there. It's like a potluck supper on there. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, oh, what am I going to get? And you're right. For the last 2 days, I'm like, this is for me? Like, none of this should be for me. What are you talking about?
Didn't I not specifically? I bragged about a month or so ago that I went through and basically you can hit a button that says not interested in posts like this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So anyway, and I liked it because even at first, some of the people that I follow for sports but who are pretty vocal politically, it kind of filtered out. I wasn't seeing their political posts, which was nice. I was able to keep my own little sports cocoon. And that all fell by the wayside this last week. It was intense, man.
Yeah, it was. It was. And it still is, even though the election's over. Yes, it is.
Wait a minute.
I know.
No.
I know.
Election's over. Nobody's going to talk about it anymore.
Everybody's just going to talk about the baseball offseason now.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Here was Nick Caserio yesterday on Texans All Access. I believe this interview runs tonight. It's on YouTube, and Nick sits down with John Harris and Mark Vandermeer every week and chats with them. And the trade deadline, obviously, a topic. Here's Nick Caserio's view on the trade deadline. Let's see if his view on it matches the activity level.
Yeah, not to be too contrite, but I mean, it's usually much ado about nothing. So essentially, a lot of players that get moved, A, are on a kind of expiring type contracts. B, hasn't worked out with their team. Most of it is kind of late round picks, some flips, essentially. You saw a few trades there, but a compensation maybe was a little bit bigger than what it was. But you're kind of looking at your team. If there's an opportunity to add a player that you have a specific defined role for, great. If not, it's just, you know, you're not going to do something just to do something, just to create a bunch of busy work. So it's on the calendar. It's there for teams. I mean, I think half the league voted to move the deadline a week. Another half voted to leave it where it is. So whenever it is, we'll prepare accordingly. We always contact teams throughout the course of the fall, look for opportunities. So once you kind of get through the trade, the only thing that's different for the trade deadline is after Tuesday, everybody has to go through the waiver wire, including the vested players. So it's not as simple as you terminate a player, and if you want to flip them to the practice squad, there's a 24-hour period where they have to go through. So some of it is just roster mechanics and roster logistics. But in the end, it's probably much ado about nothing. And it's everybody just has to do what they think is best for their football team and just try to make good decisions.
Okay, the do something crowd is not going to like that answer at all.
Right.
Minimizing the trade deadline, yeah.
Yeah, and this is one of the hard parts of just, as a fan, you know, you want stuff now. I want stuff now. I think there are a lot of guards out there. Some of the guys who aren't even on teams right now that would be probably a better solution than Kenyon Green.
Yeah.
And the part, like, so this is where I am. Okay, if you're clamoring for a wide receiver, my thought is, man, we've already seen this offense with three top-notch wide receivers, and they didn't do squat with it in terms of a total offensive effort. Nico Collins was brilliant, don't get me wrong, but they didn't do squat with it in terms of being a genuinely good offense. They had much better receivers than they had up in Kansas City and in the first half of the season, and yet there they were right there in lockstep with Kansas. Kansas City has been disappointing offensively.
Yep.
So, okay, what's a wide receiver do for the Texans right now? I don't know if it would be wasted money until they fix some of the other issues.
Sure.
Defensive back. Okuda coming back, giving them some versatility in the defensive backfield makes me feel better. I still get nervous about Jalen Petrie and man coverage in the slot. We saw that come up big time against Devontae Adams last week. But it's still a good defense. Mm-hmm. Still a very good defense in a lot of respects.
Yep.
It's that left guard position. It feels like the most minimal of moves, even if it's one that didn't work out, would have made me feel like, okay, they get it. They understand that the Kenyon Green experiment was a fiasco and that Kenyon Green was afforded opportunity after opportunity after opportunity. I have no reason to believe it was for anything other than that he's a first-round pick, and you did nothing about it. And you let fate make your decision for you by him getting injured, which, by the way, happened because he got beat so badly in a pass protection.
Right.
Like, do they understand the perfect irony and just how perfectly it fits that Kenyon Green, in a game where you wouldn't bench him even as Quinnen Williams was destroying him, Kenyon Green was injured on a play because he could not pass block Quinnen Williams, and that forced your hand.
Yep.
Like, that's a sign from the universe and the football gods that, all right, we got to do something about left guard.
Yeah.
But they feel like they're just kind of like, oh, well, we'll see. Hey, we didn't like Jarrett Patterson enough to give him a chance before, but once he comes back from a brain injury, he'll be just fine.
Yeah. It would be fun to know, like, what conversations took place with teams about offensive line here at the trade deadline. Like, how close were they? Did they think it was a big enough need to engage teams on it? You know, like,
you've got how many teams are 2-win teams right now? Is it 8?
A ton.
They're breaking a modern record for how many 2-win teams there are this late in the season.
Yeah, there's like 10 or 12 teams that I think you could say were sellers going into the last couple of days, you know, based on their record and where they are in
some of those teams screwed us over by having promising wins last year or by having the Dolphins aren't even without a victory, but they're a 2-win team that just got their quarterback back.
Yeah.
The Ravens go off and beat the Browns beat the damn Ravens with a new quarterback.
The Jets beat the Texans. The Texans did it to themselves.
All these teams that should be textbook sellers have reasons to just grasp it at some straw of optimism.
Yeah, the offensive line situation, like the trade deadline, as you pointed out multiple times today, the left guard position and the issues on the offensive line, the trade deadline is just one element as to how we got here with this whole thing. Like, that thing was screwed up before the season started, as it turns out, and it's been continually screwed up, and it's getting the quarterback injured. Like, it's getting not injured yet, but it's getting the quarterback banged up, and it's certainly affecting C.J. Stroud and how he handles the pocket. So if we're talking about the trade deadline here, yeah, like, I'm angry about where this offensive line is, and I'll get to the trade deadline before we get to the three other reasons I'm angry about it. As far as, like, the part where I look back, Seth, or the part where I look ahead and I ask myself, okay, at the end of the season, what could happen where I look back and say, man, shoulda, woulda, coulda at the trade deadline? To me, it's depth at some of the key positions on either side of the ball. Depth in the secondary. Getting Okuda back may help. To me, the two big ones are wide receiver and running back. And if something happens to Joe Mixon, Tank Dell, or Nico Collins, and this is who you're running with into the postseason, I think there it is fair to look back and say, man, look at what Khalil Herbert went for to the Bengals. Look what these all these wide receivers like DeAndre Hopkins and Mike Williams and Amari Cooper and Deontay Johnson all going for these day three pittances. You know, like Cooper went for a day two pick, but all the other guys are fifth round pick, sixth round pick swap, that kind of thing. You know, swapping a fifth for a six, and here's Deontay Johnson. I understand that there's luggage that comes with any of these guys, probably. You know, but the fact of the matter is that's the market for that level of receiver. And how engaged were they with the Patriots over KJ Osborne or Kendrick Bourne, who are both better than Xavier Hutchinson? You know, how engaged were they with the Raiders on Jacoby Myers, who's better than Xavier Hutchinson, you know, who's better than John Mechie.
Noah Brown has gotten about the same number of targets as Xavier Hutchinson this year.
Yeah.
And would Noah Brown, if he were still on this roster, would he be contributing in a way that he did last year?
That's a different, you know, like that's a different would have. Yeah, that's a difference. Yeah. Should you have cut that guy in training camp? You know?
Yeah. And there, I understand you go with youth and upside and all of that. It's just these are all the things that are clear and present in our brains right now because they could have gone different ways. Like in and of themselves, none of them are, you know, backbreaking moves. But this team is following the narrative that we are so often cautioned against, or we say ourselves that, man, winning the offseason is just not the same in the NFL as it is in other sports.
No. Nope.
There's too many variables. The rosters are too large. It's too much of a team sport to think that going out and winning the offseason is going to get it done for you. And right now, this team is very much underperforming based on the standard of, like, just look at the damn depth chart. Just look at the money you're paying these guys. It's just, it should be a better offense than they are right now.
Nicholas texts in, 5-Hour Energy fan line, 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans, says, I would have kept Cam Akers. Yeah, I mean, that's not looking good right now either.
The Vikings are another team that made traded for Cam Robinson to play offensive line. They traded for Cam Akers. And that goes back to just, again, you know, these things are in training camp where I felt like, you know, I try to have a certain humility about things where, like, a lot of times when I don't understand why a team is doing something, it's because they know more than I do, you know, or they know more than anybody else does. And their undying and steadfast commitment to Dameon Pierce was just really curious to me. It was really, really curious to me, not just based on his performance last year, but on his injury history, including his rookie year where he ended the year on IR. And yet here we are again with Dameon Pierce injured yet again. And you're trying to figure out what you have in J.J. Taylor potentially, or just how much of a three down back can a Ogunbowale be?
Yeah,
I don't get some of these decisions, and so the undying faith in Dameon Pierce, the undying faith in Kenyon Green, that's too much classically of, I think, trusting your own evaluation more so than what you see. It's Jose Abreu all over again.
Well, Petrie in the slot. You know, that's another, you know, like, I'm
Petrie
not saying
when he's in man coverage, right? Like, and I love the way they've used Petrie, but there are some glaring weaknesses when you have to rely on him being in man coverage versus good wide receivers. It's just not who he is.
Yeah.
And yet there they are relying on him in basically what amounts to a cover zero situation because he didn't have genuine safety help over the top.
Yep.
That's what they did, and it blew up in their face versus a good quarterback.
It did.
Or at least a sometimes good quarterback.
Yeah. Right. Well, right. A bad quarterback this season.
A bad
up to that
quarterback.
Point, you know, talking about Aaron Rodgers.
It felt too much like the last really good game that Eli Manning ever had in the NFL was against the Houston Texans when they just let Eli Manning carve them up over the middle.
Yep.
And like that was the last dying gasp of Eli Manning. That last week, we might at the end of the season look back and say, oh, that was the last dying gasp of Aaron Rodgers.
Maybe. Now, just a little history lesson, Seth. You know, that was week 3 of the 2018 season when the Texans started 0-3, you know what happened after that? 9-game winning streak.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
yeah. Right. So maybe the Texans are about to go on a 9-game winning streak.
9-game winning
streak. Actually, I would
with
prefer
a bunch of 1-point wins.
Yeah, there was a lot of that going on. Yeah, overtime, yeah. Pick sixes off of Nathan Peterman by Jonathan mm-hmm. Joseph. A lot of that. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing. There's only 8 games left in the season, so I would prefer that it be, you know, an 11 or 12 game winning streak, you know, because if it's a 9 game winning streak, it means they're getting knocked out in the divisional round again.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't mean they can't. They could lose a game. Oh, I got you.
You know what I mean? Yeah. There's only 8 games left in the regular season.
Hey, guys, we've had one of the most aggressive off seasons we've ever seen out of the Texans. You've got more positions that you felt awesome about heading into the season than ever before.
Yeah.
Listen, man, we're not gonna be asking for anybody to get fired if you don't win the Super Bowl. But could we win a divisional playoff game
for
the first time in our history?
No, dude,
if
they made it to the AFC title game and especially showed up in the AFC, because they probably have to go on the road to do that,
yeah.
And showed up and kind of stood in and traded blows in an AFC title game, dude, I would sign up for that right now.
Look, being an expansion team comes with a lot of ever since they changed the rules after the Jaguars and the Panthers just got way too much handed to them, and they were both in that championship game their second year in it's for any new expansion team after that, it was not nearly the same, and you go through a lot of headaches and heartache along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And we're long past that territory, obviously. Nobody's making an excuse as an expansion team, but just by way of, okay, why does it feel so weird, even though it's an expansion team, that they haven't been to a conference championship game? Because since you've been in the league, every other team in the division has been to a conference championship game. Since the Texans were created in 2002, the Jaguars, the Titans, and the Colts have all been to AFC championship games.
They've all been to AFC championship games in the last 10 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
the Titans went to one in 2019. The Jags went to one in 2017.
The Jags really should have gone to a Super Bowl. They got hosed in that game.
Yep,
yeah.
They absolutely should have. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you here in the 9 o'clock hour on a Wednesday. If you want to text in, 5-Hour Energy fan line, 713-572-4610. Dana Brown, we talked plenty about the Texans, their GM, their head coach, and all the moves that did or didn't get made. The Astros got moves they need to make. The biggest one is Alex Bregman. What are the odds they're keeping Alex Bregman? And Dana Brown had some really nice things to say, almost out of left field, or center field even, about a certain player. We'll let you hear that from the owners' meetings. That's coming up next.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
We'll circle back to the Texans in just a little bit, but a quick update on the Astros, because there could be things popping here pretty soon with free agency in baseball. Now, I know free agency in baseball can drag on literally for months for some people.
You never know, and you never can predict it. There's years where it doesn't really get started until January.
Right.
And there's other years where it starts popping off right quick.
Do you think Bregman is a guy that gets scooped up quick, or is he a guy that's sitting around waiting for a deal that he is hoping, you know, is sitting around waiting for the 7-year, 8-year deal that never comes knocking on his door?
I think Bregman strikes me as the kind of person who's perfectly content to sit and wait and see what transpires, but he's also not going to hesitate to jump on a deal that he feels good about.
Yeah.
Like, if I just from watching the way Alex Bregman operates over the years, I think he's probably got a number in his head and a contract that he likes, and maybe a list of teams that he thinks best suit him. I would imagine for Bregman, he's got a spreadsheet full of like different coaching staffs that he likes, supporting casts, everything else like that. And then he's got a number in his mind. And if it shows up, he's not going to be, I don't think he's going to be obsessed with being the highest paid player, this, that, or anything else like that. And I really think there's probably a good chance that he signed somewhere early. Because if there's one team out there that can meet those parameters, he's not going to like wait for Scott Boras to extract maximum value out of it.
Yeah, the longer it goes, the better it is for the Astros if you want to keep him, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, like the longer it goes, the less it means there's the deal out there that he's hoping to get.
Dallas Keuchel, who I believe was represented by Scott Boras at the time, right?
You're right.
When he was a free agent
the
first time. He said, well, he didn't sign until June.
Until June, yeah.
June. I think that if Bregman got into that type of a situation, now Keuchel was up against a whole lot of other factors. The fact that they kind of changed the strike zone and they screwed Keuchel when they started calling the strike zone higher.
He lived in that lower portion of the strike zone,
yeah. And it just changed everything. So like Bregman doesn't have that to contend with. But if it was getting up towards the beginning of the regular season and Alex Bregman wasn't signed, I don't think his ego would hold him back from coming back to the Astros. So maybe I'm a little bit naive in that, but I feel like Bregman in a lot of ways is the ultimate can separate emotion from the business side of it, and he would see it for what it was okay, I'm coming back to a place that I like, that I've got great memories of, and that it, you know, I've there's a lot of other things above and beyond the money that I like about here, and I think he would re-sign for maybe less than he was hoping.
Yeah, we'll see.
And now it would probably be a shorter-term deal. It would be like a Correa-style type of thing with Minnesota.
Okay, now that's interesting. Well,
with options or something.
Let's put a pin in that for one second. Here is Dana Brown, and he was asked, what do you think the chances are Bregman's coming back?
Yeah, we've had a lot of discussions with Scott Boras, multiple conversations. So we hope that they've been productive, and we're hoping that some good things happen.
Do you feel like you have a decent chance?
I think we have a really good chance.
All right, so
I think a lot of people might not have heard that. He says at the end, we feel we have a really good chance of retaining him.
Yep. So I don't know that I agree with that. As far as that's interesting. So if this thing drags on, you know, and Bregman's still sitting there, I don't think he will be. I think he's going to get signed pretty quickly. But if it drags on, and that, as you said, that happened with Correa the first time he hit free agency, so he ends up signing a 3-year deal in Minnesota for $100 million, and he's got an opt out after each season, and he opted out after that first season in Minnesota. It was. And the Astros were never going to do a deal like that. At that time, we're never going to do a deal like that with Correa. They just said, we'll just bring Jeremy Peña up. We don't want the uncertainty. We don't want the player to have all the clout as to who stays and who, you know, does he stay or does he go? Carlos had all the say in that with Minnesota. And eventually goes back to Minnesota on a longer-term deal after a lot of things. But specific to Bregman, it was funny. I saw another interview with Dana Brown online yesterday where he talked about a lot of the same things he did with, I think it was Ari Alexander's Twitter feed that we got this audio from that we just played. But I saw an interview he did on MLB Network, and they asked him, whoever was interviewing him, asked him about, would you guys be open to things like opt-outs, you know, all the things the Astros haven't normally done. They asked Dana that, and he hemmed and hawed a little bit and kind of gave lip service to, you know, entertaining the possibility of doing things to, you know, he was not in a, we'll do whatever it takes to keep Alex Bregman mode. Let me just put it that way.
I think this is where the value of Scott Boras lies. I think sometimes people overly simplify it and say, well, Scott Boras just does a great job of getting guys the absolute most money. I think the value of a good agent in pro sports is more about their ability to read the market.
Yeah.
And you go to back to the Dallas Keuchel situation. Dallas Keuchel was represented by Scott Boras in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that Boras couldn't go out and get him a deal. Keuchel turned down deals that Boras recommended he should take.
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, like Boras has a good, so Boras knew what the market was for Dallas Keuchel that year, and it, that perhaps Dallas Keuchel just didn't want to accept it. Where with Bregman, what I would hope is, all right, because Boras has his fingers in everybody's pie, he's got a good feel for what Bregman can really get. And then doing so in good faith, working with the Astros, they might be able to figure out a way to work around some of those other issues that might set Bregman's mind at ease or make it feel like, okay, that's out there and that's we can compete with other teams. I actually feel more optimistic about Bregman having Boras as his agent than if it was somebody else right now.
That's interesting.
In terms of the feasibility of re-signing him.
Yeah. Here's one more from Dana Brown. This is interesting because this question was about both Jake Meyers and Chaz McCormick. Are you going to tender offers to both guys? Are you going to offer Chaz McCormick and Jake Meyers? The entire answer here, it's almost as if Jake Meyers wasn't even mentioned in the question. It's all
you mentioned Meyers and McCormick, so you anticipate tendering those guys, both of those guys' contract?
Yeah, I mean, look, McCormick had a down year. You know, McCormick is a good player. We expect him to come back and at least, you know, get to like a 750 OPS or better. The year before, he was over an 800 OPS with over 20 home runs. And, of course, the defense is really good. So, you know, we have to check that one off. It's a bad year. It was a down year. And hopefully we can get him to bounce back because we, you know, we really need him. And then maybe we can get him, you know, some help where he doesn't have to face, you know, all of the right-handers as much. I mean, that could be productive by getting a left-handed hitting outfielder that could really step in and do a good job. So those kind of things we're trying to do to improve this club and maybe at certain points do some platoon, you know, particularly if he's struggling. But ultimately, you know, we're just trying to make certain moves to increase, you know, more production in the offense.
Now, admittedly, I don't know if there was a follow-up question about Jake Meyers. Like,
yeah,
but what about Jake Meyers, who I just asked about? I just know that Dana Brown went on for over a minute about Chaz McCormick and being asked the question about both Jake Meyers and Chaz McCormick.
I think the thing about Jake Meyers is, okay, you bring up, you know, you can bring up past seasons where Chaz McCormick was a different player than he was this year.
Yeah.
With Jake Meyers, the only time he finished with an OPS above 678 was in his rookie year in 2021, but he only played 49 games.
Yeah.
So if I take his first two seasons where he played a total of 101 games, and like let's call that one season.
Okay.
And then you look at the second and then, you know, 2023 and 2024. Yeah. In that combined first 2 years, he had a 671 OPS. In 2023, he had a 678 OPS. In 2024, 646 OPS.
And he strikes out a ton. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, there's just been enough. There's no back of the baseball card that makes you feel good about Jake Meyers.
I'm not a Jake Meyers fan, and I know there's a lot of people out there that are like, but the defense, and he's a finalist for a gold glove. I get it. He covers a lot of ground out there. He's got a minus arm. Like, he doesn't have a good arm in the outfield. Covers a ton of ground. He's definitely good for the web gem catches for sure. You know, it's funny, Seth, when Jake Meyers, whose bat is a big time minus bat, as you just outlined, it's kind of funny sometimes. Jake Meyers, it's a little bit like Dan Orlovsky with Anthony Richardson. Like, look, see, he can make that throw right there. Look.
Yeah,
with Jake Meyers will make this circus catch, and it'll be like, that's why he's on this team. That's why he's your starting center fielder. I'm like, oh, you, no kidding, not the 648 OPS, I guess, huh? Or, you know, or the all the plays where he fields the ball in the outfield, and he's got to throw a missile to third base, and the thing dribbles in there. Like, I get it. Like, Jake Meyers is a really good athlete in the outfield there. He's not a good major league hitter. Like, Chaz at least has shown the potential consistently over an extended period of time of being a good major league hitter. And they're just they're hoping he gets it back.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's where, I mean, if Myers could simply throw the ball, then it changes a lot. You look at, like, his range is in the 97th percentile.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's why he's a finalist for the Gold Glove. That's the reason.
Right, right, right. It's just crazy. It's nuts. He's just a nothing at the plate, though. And he undoes a little bit of his awesome defensive play with just not having a good arm whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like, even as a defensive specialist, you don't feel like the guy in a one-run game that, okay, great, he's going to hoover up some stuff out there. But, like, if things get dicey, what's he do with the ball after he catches it on the bounce?
Yeah, it's just, man, you listen to Dana Brown talk about this offseason, and there's nothing splashy coming down the pipe this year. You know, there's no Josh Hader out of nowhere. There's no Jose Abreu. There's, like, when he's talking about a left-handed bat to pair with Chaz in the outfield, like, it's going to be some cheapo one-year veteran bat, you know, like, it's, if they bring somebody in, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, he was
talking
about first base, like upgrading at first base, and I'm seeing quotes about Zach DiCenzo, you know, who was on the team last. Like, I'm not afraid of playing these young guys. I'm like, okay. I mean, that's cool and all, but I don't know that they're good.
If we took the emotional barometer of the Houston fan base on the three major teams right now, there have been some wild swings and fluctuations over the last year.
Yeah.
I think the Astros, man, this is as uneasy as I've felt about the Astros in a long time, especially when it looks like it might be time to rip the Band-Aid off and have a bit of a reset year or two here.
Yeah.
The Rockets, optimism with question marks, obviously, but you've got a young core that you can build around, and you're eager to see, okay, which version of the Rockets ends up showing up. And then I don't know where the Texans are right now emotionally.
I feel like
this is the one where you're still trying to process exactly what the hell's going on with the Texans.
It's tough too, because it's in season, and there's the ebbs and flows with each week and the games and things like that. The Rockets are still so early, and the Astros are in the off season.
The first month of the NBA season feels like an extended preseason.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yep. I'll say this: I'm confident in all three GMs in this city. Like, I have confidence in Dana. But, like, Dana Brown's moves he made last year, he was widely criticized for the Kikuchi move, and that wound up being a really good move. And some of the other little moves he made on the margins, whether it was bringing guys in or recommending Ronel Blanco be a starter, like all those, like, Dana, I thought, did a good job last year, considering some of the cleanup that he was doing with the Abreu situation that wasn't his doing. I think Rafael Stone's done a nice job of doing exactly what he's been asked to do, which is build a nice young core, position yourself to go make a big, huge move at some point. And I think for all the criticism Nick Caserio is getting today for not making a trade, it's hard to say Nick hasn't done a good job as the general manager of this football team, you know?
Do you think that the Astros as an organization have it in them right now to remain steadfast? If they chose to go more of a modified reset route, do they have that same ability to be steadfast in the way they operate, the way they did in the early years of Jeff Luhnow?
Yes.
Because with them, with Jeff Luhnow, he obviously wasn't coming off of an incredible playoff streak or anything like that. And people were just kind of emotionally dead about the Astros anyway, whereas this is a different scenario.
I think if they visibly change kind of what their mission and MO is, I think Crane will stick to it. I don't think Crane is somebody who's going to, like, veer off. And I think Dana Brown would be kind of into it, because it would involve bringing a lot of young players in, and that's his forte, you know?
But it's got to take Jim Crane really genuinely trusting in Dana Brown.
For 100%.
You know, do you pivot 18 months into it because you don't like Dana Brown?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. All right, according to one of the outlets that simulates the NFL season and puts the playoff picture together, the season's basically over in the AFC, according to this. Are we buying these percentage chances of making the playoffs, including for your Houston Texans? That is next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll hand things over to the guys on In the Loop, top of the hour. So Sportsline, which is a gambling analytic type website, did their simulation of the rest of the NFL season. And in the AFC, it would appear that we should just go ahead and start the playoffs, because according to Sportsline, the following teams all have a greater than 89% chance of making the postseason. I will count upwards. The Los Angeles Chargers, Jim Harbaugh, how about that? 88.8% chance of making the postseason. 88.8% is a lot with half the season still to go. And they have the sixth best percentage. There's five teams, according to the simulations, that have over a 90% chance of making the playoffs. The six
they play in a division with the Chiefs, too.
Yeah, yeah, they do. But just the playoffs, the wild card works for that. The Pittsburgh Steelers, 6-2 right now, have a 90.2% chance of making the playoffs. The Houston Texans, 6-3, with a city that's angry about no trades at the trade deadline, 93.1% chance of making it. Does it feel like the Texans have a 93.1% chance of making the postseason, Seth, for you right now?
Yes.
Me too.
Yeah, because I don't think they played all that differently against the Jets than they played against any other team that they played against this year. It really, I mean, it was a lot of what we've already seen. It's just that the Jets managed to elevate their play above what they'd had. But there hasn't been a point this season, I don't think, where I've genuinely felt like, okay, yeah, this team is playing a lot better than a 500 football
team. That's right.
They've been playing. And Sean, when you go through, and this is, you know, like, I try not to, like, you remember when I was doing my Stathead Seth character and I got a little too into it?
Yeah.
And you start living in this world of advanced stats where basically you can convince yourself of anything by looking at the advanced. The whole purpose of advanced stats amongst fans, not the teams, is basically be able to prove that any horrible player is actually good and that any great player is actually not that good.
Right.
So I stopped that, but I still like to go back to some of the old places, the old joints and dives where they have the advanced stats.
Yeah.
But I like those EPA graphs where they have everybody, like all the teams, the team logos are on this graph.
Oh, yeah.
And generally, if you're in the upper right quadrant, it's really good.
Yeah.
So whether you're talking about running the ball, short yardage, pass protection, strength of schedule, any of that. And just when you start to look at overall offense and defense, the Texans, my God, you can find them by finding them right there at the 0-0.
They're right
at the center of the graph.
Yeah.
Where, man, they are a mediocre football team. Hey, they're a little bit above average defensively here. Hey, they're a little bit below average offensively there. They're a 500 football team, and they're in a bad division. So, yes, I still feel confident that they're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, this is just making the playoffs. That's all it is, and you're right. The avenue for them is winning the division. You're right. They live at the nexus of the average football team universe is what
their strength of schedule for the rest of the season by EPA. They're smack dab in the middle of that graph.
Yeah, and I think that's the key thing to point out. And I'll just to close this out here, the other three teams ahead of the Texans all have a 99% chance or greater of making the postseason. Baltimore 99, Buffalo 99.9, Kansas City 99.9%. So those three teams have virtually locked things up according to these computers. Now, quarterback injury can change anything, you know, with any of these teams. I think if you're just looking at the Texans for the full season here, and I know there are Super Bowl aspirations here. We get questions on the text page. Hey, does them not making any moves mean they're not all in on this year, that they're more in on next year? No, it means they didn't see any trades they liked, and they may be a little overly loyal to some of the guys who are in the building right now. But as far as this season goes, the Texans are 6-3 right now. 9-8 is going to win this division. Especially when you've got the tiebreaker over the team that's right behind you. Like, the Colts have to go 6-2 with some combination of Joe Flacco and Anthony Richardson at quarterback to go 10-7 this year. So they have to, if you're 9-8, they got to go 10-7. There are three more wins on this schedule. I know, as bad as everybody feels about a loss to the Jets and, oh my God, the Lions are coming up and they're this grim reaper that's got this guillotine ready to just slice off 53 Houston Texan heads. There are still three wins on this. Like, this team is going to the postseason, you know?
And I think, honestly, when if you're looking at it as, oh, the Texans didn't make a big move at the trade deadline, so they're not all in, this isn't baseball. It's not where it's a slam dunk, you got to make a move to round out this or that. And there's a lot of good teams every year that either win the Super Bowl or go to the Super Bowl that don't make moves at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times those teams aren't looking like the Texans do right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, in a way that's not trying to take blame away from himself or anything, if I'm Nick Caserio, I'm looking at the roster, and what I'm thinking is, like, no, they should be performing better than this. D'Amico keeps saying these are correctable issues.
Yeah.
why is Bobby Slowick not correcting these issues?
Correct.
What's going on that's leading to them to play this way? And then the big, huge, glaring question is, all right, how much of Kenyon Green getting chance after chance after chance, is that on D'Amico? Is that on Nick Caserio himself? Like, who's pushing for the Kenyon Green experiment? Or who was pushing for, like, undying trust and loyalty in Kenyon Green's development? Because that was a failure. That was an extreme failure.
Well, it was a failure that impacted more than just Kenyon Green failing in a vacuum. You know what I mean? It was a failure that had an effect on his other fellow offensive linemen because they had to cover for him. It was a failure that has taken a physical toll and maybe even a mental toll on your young quarterback. Like, that's the thing, man. Like, there are certain positions where you fail, and I know it's a symbiotic sport where it's 11 men on each side of the ball, and it's so interconnected and everything else. But Kenyon Green, like that was an exponential impact. It wasn't just him failing in a vacuum, man. Like,
it's a lot of the things that they've done to try to cover that up, and some of the protections that they've used. And when you scream about Slowick using a running back or a tight end to block a really good edge rusher, yeah, a lot of that happens because you're trying to send Laremy Tunsil down to help out Kenyon Green in that interior overall. It's created a ripple effect that affects the other offensive linemen too.
Yep.
So a lot of the other bad snaps that the other offensive linemen have had, just looking back on it over the course of the first half of the season, those are bad plays that lots of good offensive linemen have. I personally don't think that Laremy Tunsil or Titus Howard are playing up to their contracts, but they're playing winning football.
Yeah.
And so, like, in terms of where is this team right now, and what could you do? What's the easiest, simplest thing you could have done to make you feel better about the offense? Left guard is a huge, glaring part of it.
Yeah.
Because you're, like, Kenyon Green has been that bad. It's enough that, okay, you usually a good offensive line can get by with a couple of suspect offensive linemen,
right,
but not when they're the worst player in the league.
Agreed. Text message to the 5-Hour Energy fan line. Sean, have you paid attention to the four games they play after the Lions? 4-0. Okay, a couple things here. One, yes, I'm in sports talk
radio.
Were you
not just saying that?
And I cover the Texans. Yeah. Yes, I've paid attention to the schedule. I just said there's three more wins on this schedule. Now, I said there's three more wins on this schedule. Before we start to get done with this Lions game and then anoint the Texans winners of these next four games, Texter, have you watched this team this year? They play in those four games. They play the Cowboys on the road. They host the Titans on a short week. They travel to Jacksonville, and then they have a bye week, and they face Miami at home. I understand record-wise and situationally and vibe in the building-wise, those are four teams that are very downtrodden right now. The Texans have let bad teams hang around in games this year. One of them was Jacksonville at NRG Stadium in week four. And so you're sitting here saying they're going to be 4-0, and they may very well be. I think they'll be favored in all four of those games. But the Texans have a habit. Do I need to point this out again? The Texans
have a habit.
About
the Bears game,
The Jags game, and then the Bills game where they were up. They could have gone up. They were up 20-3 and let the Bills back in the game. And the second Colts game, the Texans have a high ceiling when they're playing very, very well. There are a lot of games that have been close that should not have been close because the Texans allowed teams to stay in the game. There are also games where they just kind of played slipshod, to use a Seth word, coming out of the gate, and they allowed teams to hang around. So if you want to anoint them 4-0 in the games after this Detroit game coming up, boy, knock yourself out, I tell you. Yeah. But I'm not ready to do that quite yet.
I'll tell you another thing, too, as far as just an easy and convenient way to check in and see, okay, is this team better than they were last year? They went up to New York yet again and just completely wet the bed.
Late in it.
You know, they went up to the Meadowlands to face a bad Jets team and completely wet the bed.
Yep.
They had every opportunity in the first half of that game to seize upon a malfunctioning, just the mess of a team in the New York Jets. They didn't take any of it. And then they just absolutely got destroyed in the second half. They got beat down in the second half. That's why I was so angry. So many people were when Titus Howard said, we let that game slip away from us. No. What? No. Slip away?
Well.
over the course of the third and fourth quarter, sure, you let it slip away from you.
Factually, he's correct. They did let it slip away. The part that he said that was factually incorrect is we were the better team. That was the part. Yeah. Remember, he said we were the better team. Like, no, you were definitely not.
Yeah, and I would object to both the better team part and the slipping away part.
Yeah.
Slipping away is like when you have a healthy lead.
Yeah.
You don't have a 7-0 lead. True. You got a healthy lead. And then you put up some kind of fight in the second half.
Yep.
Not the defense let up three straight touchdown drives. The offense did what they do in the second half. They just don't score touchdowns. Yeah, yeah. There's no slipping away there.
Reggie Atitula, John Lopez, the fellas are here for In the Loop. How we feeling, fellas?
Slipped away like an episode of Cops.
Oh, man.
I had him. I was so close to him.
The guy, the guy that's trying to talk his way out of a traffic incident, and they show him in the car, and he's telling the cops he wasn't drinking. Then they zoom back, and there's like a telephone pole sitting on the car. Why'd you pull me over? Sir, we didn't pull you over.
Yeah. Oh yeah, man. On patrol. It used to be Live PD. Now it's On Patrol. You guys watch that?
Oh, it's still going on.
It went away for a while, and then it came back under the name On Patrol. And if you haven't seen it, it's like the Red Zone channel for crime. You know, they've got like six cities.
Oh, I thought they called that something live.
It was Live PD. It used to be Live PD.
Oh, okay.
And then it went away for a couple of years, and it came back. Same show, but they call it On Patrol now. And they got Dan Abrams sitting in like a mission control with like screens in Terre Haute, Indiana, somewhere in South Carolina, Vegas, a few other places where there's, you know, fairly high entertaining crime rates. They don't do anything super duper violent. A lot of domestic disturbances and a lot of DUI tests, but they're very, very funny. And he's got a couple cops that sit in there with him. Like, you know, it's like having a couple former football players sitting in a studio.
I hope it's not like Mike Pereira, because I feel like...
we need a rules analyst.
Yeah,
to be the lawyer. They have a lawyer sitting there as the rules. But he's like, let's go out to... Oh, we've got a situation out in Terre Haute. And you got some redneck in his shorts.
It's never as good as you think it's going to be.
Getting pulled over. I don't know, man. It's pretty entertaining. How you guys feeling?
Good, man.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. You as angry as the text page was today about the trade deadline?
Well, we obviously are going to talk about it. I don't know if angry is the right word. We were talking about it before the show. Just sort of like...
John, are you disappointed? I'm not angry.
I'm not disappointed.
Somebody's daddy definitely showed up.
I'm not distraught. I said that yesterday.
I'm not mad. I'm disappointed.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I got it.
Resigned. I'm resigned.
I've got my emotion wheel out. There's a piece of the pie that's angry. So the different anger emotions.
Okay, let's see.
Let me see which one. Are you annoyed?
Little bit annoyed. Little bit resigned to the fact that this is what it's going to be.
Okay.
That's the main thing. Yeah.
Are you skeptical?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
And we're going to actually dig in on that right away.
Skepticism,
yeah.
huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you guys say to the guys that the people that text in like that they're not all in? Like, well, clearly they're just playing for next year now.
They're all in on this year.
Yeah.
I think they actually are kind of recalibrating. You know what exactly? How good they exactly are?
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
You know, like they came in guns blazing. We're going to be a Super Bowl contender. Now they're like, let's take our punchers. You know, let's have a puncher's chance here.
Yeah. They're all in the way that I think you can be with a young quarterback and those types of things. Like, they're not doing Last Dance stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that when we talk about all in, we might be a little too extreme in expecting them to just be like, throw the kitchen sink at it for this one season and we'll deal with the future later. And I don't think you actually want the later that you were clamoring for in that situation.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of the moves I think people wanted yesterday, they did back in March and April.
Yes.
You know, this team. So Seth's got a look on his face right now. What's going on?
I'm just looking at that. I'm realizing that this emotion wheel is British because they spelled skeptical with a C, which is the way they do in Britain. And I'm like, I don't know if British emotions can apply to a red blooded man.
Are they allowed to have emotions out there? Is that how that works?
They've got a whole section of harumph. Yeah, harumph is not here a lot.
All right. Wait, on that note,
how do you follow Harumph?
Chaffed on the list?
Good place
to drop
the mic, Seth. Whatever it says on there, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies. I've been thoroughly ridiculed, and it's made me indignant.
Harumph.
All right, Harumph.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.